Carsten. Welcome to the Commerce Talks podcast. Last time we met in Berlin, I think it was in September.
Yeah, I think September, last year.
We had a nice conversation on the Seamless keynote stage, and then we discussed that we might continue this discussion in your hometown, Aarhus, which the ones that watch this via YouTube can see here in the background.
Yeah.
So, and some of the listeners have not been at the Seamless conference in Berlin, I have to tell you.
Really,
so you have to introduce yourself.
Of course.
Your company or the company you're working for.
Gladly. No, thank you. Yeah, Carsten and I am the managing director for King Food, Denmark and Sweden, which are the master franchise behind Burger King in Denmark and Sweden. So we run the master franchisees also for Norway, but that's not my responsibility. I have Denmark and Sweden, and we run both own restaurants through our company, but also, of course, our franchise with our franchisees in both markets.
Can you give us a bit of your history? Have you always worked for Burger King? Have you started as a burger juggler?
Yeah, no, I actually did, but I was in my hometown with my mother's grill bar. I think that was where I learned the burgers first time. So not that much QSR experience. I came from retail. I've been working with Lidl for almost 9 years, different positions.
Here in Denmark?
Here in Denmark and a little bit abroad doing a director program we have, where you go to other countries and also work to get inspiration and see processes. So I was there for almost 9 years and needed to try something different. And at the same time, our owners of the master franchise wanted to have a new country manager coming in the market in Denmark. And we had a good dialogue and ended up finding a common ground. So I started with Burger King Denmark first in end of 2022. And then I took over Sweden 5 months ago-ish, maybe 6 months now, actually, in the end of 2023.
Nice. Can you give us some like rough KPIs about the Burger King business or like the franchise business here in the country? So how many people are working in the restaurant? How many restaurants?
Yeah,
how many burgers are...
We in Denmark, we run 58 restaurants. Half of them we run ourselves through the King Food Company, and the other half, 29, is run by five different franchisees. Mm. We also have one in Faroe Islands. So they also are under our umbrella for the Danish market. So 58 in Denmark and one on the Faroe Islands. We expect to open two more this year. So we're going to hit 60. That's a nice round number. And then we're going to keep expanding the next couple of years. We can go more into that later, maybe. Employee-wise, we have around 1,500 employees in all the restaurants in Denmark. And in Sweden, we run 31 restaurants with King Food Company. And the rest, we have 120 there. So the rest, 90 restaurants in Sweden, is divided out on franchisees there. So a lot larger franchisee market in Sweden.
In what's the difference between the franchise and the owner's restaurant, or if there's an advantage in like one form or the other? So why are you owning then instead of franchising them out?
We're owning because we want to run the business ourselves. Because if we are able to support our franchisees, we need to understand the core business. Mm. So that's why we have restaurants ourselves. And we also use them, of course, for new tests, new processes. We have new, right now we're actually introducing new King's Journey, which are really customer-based approach and digital approach, which are really, really good. And that is easy now. We can test it at our restaurants and then present it for the franchisees when we're done and have luckily found all the mistakes and errors and optimized the system. Here is the full package. So that gives an advantage that we can actually test and implement new things in the restaurant without putting it out on the franchisees. So that, I think that's really, we'll keep the core. We'll always have, if it's half-half or is it one-third, not so important, but we will always have restaurants in the markets.
Yeah, and before we come into all the like trends and digitalization, all the stuff which was the core of the conversation at the Seamless conference, like just zooming out a bit. So you're expanding here in both markets. So is it also the same thing happening with Burger King, apart from Russia, I guess? But is it the same thing with the rest of the world? Is it an expanding business model, or are we at the peak of this kind of business model?
I can start talking for my markets. We see Denmark a lot of potential. We mapped it during the last 6 months. Mm. And I think it's very clear that we see huge growth potential in Denmark. What the exact number is not certain, but I think a minimum of 20 to 30 restaurants we'd like to grow the next 5 years in the Danish market. So bringing us up to 80, 90 restaurants in total.
And where does this growth come from? Is it like people are spending more time in restaurants and going, getting their dinner, food, lunch, whatever, outside? Or are you stealing market share from other concepts or from other franchise systems?
We in the market as a whole, for the Danish market, we have the last year taking 3 points of market share in the competitors. So we are gaining from the competitors. That's one of the drivers. The second is that we are not done. When we look at the coverage of restaurants, both physical restaurants where you go into, the classic ones with drive-throughs and eat in, we're lacking visibility and coverage. I think we still have blind spots in the market. And if also if you look at coverage with home delivery, digital sales channels, also have potential where we can be more visible.
Okay, we'll come to the delivery thing in a minute. Yeah. But do you believe that you can get market share from, let's say, if we look outside, we might see like one or two Italian restaurants. Yeah. So that people that are going for lunch, business lunch or dinners would then go to a Burger King?
Yeah, I think so. I think yes and no. Yeah, I think we should be clear what is the target group and segment we are working with. And if you got to want to have a maybe a good dinner or an hour or so also with some red wine or whatever, then it's not, of course, Burger King, McDonald's or Sunset you go to, in my opinion. But I think you see more and more people go out having the convenience on the go. People want to move from A to B, driving or transporting themselves. There's an easy way to get some food, some good food, pretty fast. But the competitors are a lot. Yeah, we have the large one, of course, but there's a lot of small competitors also, especially when you are in the larger cities as always Copenhagen. So the market is tough. It's not an easy market to grow in. And then coming back to maybe more the business model and the concept. That's
but where do the competitors come from? Because like from a McDonald's and Burger King kind of perspective, those are such huge brands, kind of Nike, Adidas kind of brands. Yeah. So what is then the value proposition of like a small competitor who's starting out maybe in Denmark? Is it a niche like burritos only or pasta only?
That's niche production. Yeah, you go in and you have a clear donut bar or sandwich bar or salad bar, but you only focus on that. And that, of course, takes some of the guests away from us, or can take the guests away from us, because we're not doing everything. And I think that's important just to say it. We need to be able to focus on the core business, and that is doing really good burgers.
But I believe that in the past you might have looked into those new business opportunities, because when we came here to Aarhus, we stopped by a charging station with a Burger King attached, and I ordered something, and then I just, in order to prepare for this podcast, I went through the whole menu and. Yeah. It's really around burgers and some different forms of fries that are part of the menu. That are part of the menu, but there's not a big salad selection or pasta or pizza. And and there were like different times and for different trends. I think we are beyond the pizza peak. Yeah. I would say.
Yeah.
Have you tried it out, or was it like an innovation in that direction in the Burger King franchise?
Yeah, no, we haven't. Not in my time tried the pizza. I don't know if we've done it before. I'm sure, but not the last couple of years. But what we look into innovation wise. It's still around the core of the, like you say, the burgers. We want to keep it around that, but still we can add in and do, a little bit fun with the also local things. For example, in Denmark, we launched this called the bøf sandwich. It's a beef sandwich. It's quite an iconic thing for the Danish market, and that works very well. So we do, national market relevant tests and assortment adjustments. So I think innovation is key to be relevant also moving forward. But I think the focus should be around the core, which are the burgers, and where people maybe can go other directions.
So what is the vegan share in your burger business? Because I saw you there's vegan burgers you're serving. How big is the share already?
Yeah, it's we have actually currently, I think it's 13 products, which are meat-free products in different variations. But the share is not that high. It goes from, it's restaurant from restaurant. So national, I think we're talking about 5%, not more. And if we look to the local restaurants, there is restaurants who has very little or none. So it's an offer we tested when we pushed it a lot last year. We had this fully green or meat-free restaurant in Rådhuspladsen in Copenhagen, where we did 1 month of meat-free products. And we could really see...
How did it go?
It went very well, meaning that when we compare the sales to before and then after, when we changed it to meat-free, it was quite similar during the day hours. It is a 24 restaurant. So during the night, when people, especially weekends, needed some meat, maybe with some alcohol, they would go to the competitors, which are all around in Copenhagen. So, but during the day, it's more one-to-one almost. So we didn't drop the sales, and we could see people actually enjoying the meat-free alternatives. But as soon as we remove all the focus, people go often back to what they normally would order. So that the share dropped severely. Okay.
And then one other macroeconomic question. So I don't know if we have discussed it in the session we had at Seamless in Berlin, or it was like another food podcast I've recorded. But my understanding is that the family-owned, single-run restaurant, the Italian restaurant, the Vietnamese restaurant, do face a hard time in the future because they are losing market share more and more towards like franchised restaurants because you have a better value chain management. You're getting you have like a much better HR management, we might face what we see in the US, where it's more or less 80% like franchise kind of restaurants systems available versus like in Europe. I don't know. It feels like the other way around. Maybe it's wrong. Is this true? Is this observation still true that we are moving towards a franchised world, regardless if it's Burger King or like a pasta chain or what else?
I think I'm not sure. I don't see that in the same way here in the markets I'm responsible for. I see there's still a lot of potential for the local owners to try to be diverse in the competition and do something that will attract the customers. So I think they are relevant and still will be moving forward. But of course, you're right, at some extent, in my opinion, when you talk about the whole cost and value chain, because we run it quite well and it's really strong. Also, our marketing, as you say, and that is, of course, difficult to beat if you want to expand. If you have more than one restaurant, once you have a volume, then you're going to suddenly be a competitor directly to one of the bigger chains, and that's difficult. But we have some of the chains coming up also within the burger segment, which are doing quite well in Denmark, which are not maybe at a volume that says 10 to 20 restaurants and doing okay. So, but also at the same time, we also have someone who's not doing okay and struggling. So it's a difficult market. So I don't know if we'll see the franchise will grow that much in total in the market. I think still there is room for both, but there's no doubt that we will see, I think, the bigger brands taking even more market share and cleaning up a little bit in the market, because it will, the competitors will feel this moving forward. Because no one is going back.
I got it. But maybe it's not happening as fast as we are fearing it is. Okay. And then I'm right now preparing a podcast with the CEO of StepStone, who wrote a book in Germany, a very successful one, where he said, okay, in the past, like many workers were worried about like becoming jobless. But it's like not turning around because like demographics is changing so fast that we don't have enough workers anymore. So his book is titled, I don't know how to translate it in English, but Workerless.
Yeah.
So, and therefore, like every industry, every business that is relying on a lot of like manual workforce will become way more complicated to run or become more expensive. And when I arrived at your restaurant at the supercharger in Aarhus, obviously I saw the displays where you had to order.
Yeah.
I don't even know if there was a normal order possibility anymore. If I could have gone to the front, I don't know.
No.
And then I was reminded about my preparation. Okay, maybe that's just the start because there's not enough people anymore who would take the order. So you focus on the ones who make the burgers because it's harder to do with robots.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a bit more? Is it really kind of a struggle already, or is it still manageable?
I think it's still manageable. That's the short answer. But I think there's a different perspectives on this. I think we need to go back and go from inside out and see how can we be attractive as a working place. That's my approach. How can I, because the workers are there, so how can I compete with retailers or, you know, other in the market where similar salary on similar conditions, but the work in the Burger King or one of the competitors is hard work, but we need to do it to fun work. We need to create some, you know, atmosphere around them so it has a value for them, and relevant. Especially
how do you do it, the bun juggler? How do you make
the burger is still the burger. You need to build the burger, so we can't change that. But I think for us, what we work with is very much, and it's a classic thing, but very much involvement of the crews out there and listen to what do you want, especially the younger group. And I'm not the younger group anymore. but they have different.
That's not true.
No, thank you. That's so kind. No, but they have different needs. And I think trying to understand the needs for especially the crew we have, which are a bigger part of the total workforce from 18 to 22, 25. We need to understand what is driving them, what is the motivation for them to meet in, have a good 8 to 10 hour shift, and have fun together with the colleagues, and thereby delivering a really, really strong guest experience, because that is what we need to be competitive in the market. And what we try to do, as I said, very basic, we try to involve, listen. We also try to do maybe a little bit more fun and celebration that we normally would do. You know, last month, one of the crew or ops team took out and surprised some of the restaurants, having a little bit of fun with a sound box and play some music and just give them a major high five for some of the numbers they performed or whatever we put in as KPIs. So this celebration, a little bit more focus on the successes and the fun. And I'm maybe not the best ambassador, to be honest, on the fun part, but I'm trying to find and work with the colleagues who are much more into that, because I think that's a major driver. Back to your question, how do we attract and retain the workforce we need to drive the business? But of course, we need them. Yeah.
As part of a global brand, how much freedom do you have to do those decisions, stylings of the restaurant, recipes, menu?
I think we have a really good cooperation with RBI, who is the brand owner. And the freedom is quite large within the markets, I think. So we want to do something. It needs to be approved. There needs to be a dialogue. So we are following the overall concept, of course. So we are aligned from a guest perspective all over the markets, which make total sense. But going into the different markets and adjusting and be relevant, making, for some, change the assortment to a burger who can actually make sense. We have one in the airport, Copenhagen Airport, which is called King of Nyhavn, which are a very local reference to Nyhavn, which are in Copenhagen, a very popular tourist place. It's a fish burger, and it's really, really good. And it's approved, of course. That's something we need to align. So all the compliance, everything quality-wise behind is checked, and we are aligned. So that's something, but the maneuver or the freedom to maneuver within the markets are quite high, in my opinion.
From the 1,500 employees working for you in Denmark, how many are working in the headquarter doing this quality assurance, for example?
Yeah, we work with a group function across the three markets. We cover the three markets. I have the two, and then we have the local GNA or the local offices also. We have in Copenhagen, I think we are around, in total, my team is around 25.
Okay,
running
so small.
Yeah, so small, yeah. And then we have group functions and around the same, around 25 to 30 people. So
the order experience I got today was like the displays in the store. That is something that is developed centrally in the US, for example, and then rolled out in the free market?
No, it's dependent on the supply we use. We have different, there's again freedom to choose different suppliers within the markets. The one we are using on the kiosk or self-ordering screens is something we choose and then use. And then we set it up to be as most efficient or relevant for the guest as possible within the market. That can also be different from Denmark to Sweden to Norway. So it's not necessarily the same solution. Software is the same, but the setup, the way it clicks you through the customer journey can be very different and hopefully relevant for each market. But there's different possibilities there. And the head office, we try to keep small and try to put the resources out in operations and the business.
And for the 30 to 40 new stores you might open in Denmark, if you could choose here, if you look down here at the Cinemex Aarhus, if you can get like some space in there versus like the new biggest supercharger close to Kolding at the highway, what's your pick?
I need to pick one, I will go with this one central, and that says, you know, I need to pick one, but we actually just did a cooperation end of last year with one of the biggest EV charging companies in Denmark and try to create the synergies there is with EV charging.
And is there a synergy? So do you see it working?
Yeah, I see it working. It's still in early phases information-wise, but we see it where we have like the Tesla chargers. You Tesla charged yours and you went into the Burger King. So there is a need for 20 minutes break, why don't you grab a burger with us instead? Yeah.
And are the EV producers trying to convince you to put like a Burger King menu in the system in the car? Because that's actually where With Spryker, we are pretty involved in discussions with in-car commerce. And yeah. then we say, okay, what's your case? What's the in-car commerce case? Yeah, we want to sell subscriptions for heated seating, which some brands are trying, which is not a good idea from a customer experience perspective because they feel betrayed. But obviously the next big thing is, okay, we know where the customer is and when the car needs to be charged. And then we might offer him like 10% discount at the supercharger with the Burger King, or 10% discount at the Starbucks, the next supercharger. And therefore, and the business goal is obviously to sell retail media. So you should pay for it.
Yeah.
I definitely would try to convince you implementing the Burger King experience in the Tesla menu. Have you seen such discussion?
Not on that level. I think it's really interesting. What we discuss is on the charger itself. When you are there, then there is relevance to go or sentiment to go to Burger King with the discount code.
Yes.
You scan with a QR, whatever, or you have the app.
Then so you have this kind of near field advertisement?
No, we haven't that done yet. This is just what we agreed on and we'll be implemented. So this is one of the discussion we have with the charger, the supplier, that we can actually integrate this experience with the charging experience. So I very much align. I think it's going that direction. And
how aggressive are you allowed to be on charging stations? Because I'm looking at it from a business perspective.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have a lot of people parking there. Yeah. Some are like sitting in the car and playing like stupid Tesla games. But you could, when there's like not a big line in the store, you can tell your people, okay, you're getting like 10% of every order that comes through your, let's say, marketing initiative outside. Yeah. Here's your flyers. Go to the Tesla owner. Say, okay, I give you like 10% now if you want. You come with me. Here we have a very good Neaven burger available today. Are you interested?
Yeah. We're not doing that currently. Yeah?
Yet.
No. Tomorrow we will. Thank you. No, I think there's definitely a smarter way to work with people needed to stay for a certain amount, 20, 30 minutes, and how to get that traffic into the restaurant and create sales. So we are working on different solution integration with charging companies, software, so on. But I think the good old one going out doing the physical is also a possibility, but not something we have done now.
Yeah, it's because the interesting stuff is I've also, since we met last year, I've started a new podcast in the energy sector. Yeah. It's called Energy Zone. So I'm pretty aware of how the whole energy market is changing.
Yeah.
And obviously there's an incentive for charging providers to let cars charge with lower speed because it costs less money.
Yeah.
Instead of, let's say, 10 kroners or 10 cents per kilowatt hour, let's say 50 cents, you can offer him like 25 cents. And from the difference, you could make an offer for like if you charge lower, you get a burger for free.
Yeah.
And when somebody is coming into the restaurant, get a burger for free, obviously he will pick fries and a drink. Cool. So there's so many like opportunities, but you're not on this level yet.
No,
okay.
No, we're not there. And I think that's one of the possibilities we're looking into with the new concept we did on national level to have this synergy with charging. Was integrated,
Okay. So some of the listeners might have forgotten now, but it was a big topic still last year in Berlin, Corona, which was helping many retailers to think about delivery options out of home option. And I was surprised when we talked first in preparations for the conference that there was kind of a delivery option for burgers, which was new to me, where I thought, okay, what is the business model here? So how can you cover all the costs with like delivering burgers? Can you share a bit of the experience here?
Yeah, of course. First of all, it's a massive market and it's growing rapidly. That's really
still
especially where here in Aarhus, but the larger cities we have, when you have coverage from the aggregators, no matter if it's Wild, Just Eat or whatever, Foodora, then we will see the impact. You will see the potential sales are huge. People want to order from home and want to have it delivered. What it creates, of course, is obvious thing is quality. That's really, really important for us. So that's something we are not struggling with, but we are very aware of. How do we ensure the quality, the freshness, and good experience when you eat your burger after being delivered? That's something we are really working hard on with the aggregators.
Can you walk us through the customer journey? So how does it work? I have the Burger King app.
You don't use, maybe you use one of the aggregators. That will be normal. You use Wolt or Foodora, Just Eat. But you log on to the app. You have different solutions, offers. You will choose Burger King, of course. And then you will order the Whopper meal. Then it will give you the price. And it will give you also the delivery time and delivery price. So you have a total cost, the food and the delivery.
What is the delivery price for like a Whopper menu?
It varies. It's on Vault actually. So we don't, that's not on our business.
So they charge the delivery fee.
The aggregator charge, you know, Foodora, Just Eat, they will charge the delivery fee, yeah? And
but what is it like roughly? So are we talking like $3, $5?
Yeah, I think around $5 to $6, depending on the distance and the volume. And but there's a lot of different models here, because also you can have a monthly fee you pay, and then you have free or very low. If you have a high volume, you order a lot of food.
It's like Amazon Prime for food delivery.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So there are different models.
That's the same. I never thought about that. Yeah. No, that makes sense.
So you have a monthly fee, and then you get a major discount, or you actually sometimes also have free delivery on your orders. So so that's different models within the different aggregators. And then you cash out and you pay, and then you have, let's say, 20 minutes, 30 minutes later, it will be delivered. But what we look at in that process, if you go behind that from what when you order to you get your food, is, of course, we get the order in the restaurants. And then we have a clear time slot when the delivery will come and pick it up. It needs to be ready at that point and not before, because, again, back to the quality experience is so important. And then we also have a very clear time frame for delivery to go out to the guest or the customer in the end. So I think that's very balanced. It goes quite well, because we all have the same, you know, sentiment from both aggregator.
And you had the out-of-home option before. So you have like, you're picking it still in the brown bags, right? There's nothing special.
No, there's nothing special. And then it comes in a heat bag, of course, from the aggregator. When they take all the lyric come in, they will put it in the heat bag.
Okay.
And it makes sure to also keep the heat. That's the main thing, to keep the freshness and the quality. So, but that's something we will see grow and grow. And that's become a much higher criteria on when we select new locations, like you talked about before. That's maybe the main driver, what you asked me, highway location, a motorway location, or in a central location. The coverage here with home delivery will be much higher. And that's why the growth potential, when we look at the numbers, are really high.
And I guess you've also looked into options doing delivering yourself when you started looking at it. So
yeah, it's an ongoing discussion, actually. It is something we touch on every second month, or not every second, every half year, or see if there's anything changes in the market, meaning can we now do a more profitable business with doing home delivery ourselves, because that's, of course, we also have a fee we pay, of course, to have this service. So we would like to keep as much in within the business as possible. But right now, with the regulation there is and the salary and all the setup, it's difficult to do a good distribution business without having very high volume.
Yeah, and I had the COO of Domino's Pizza in the podcast in Germany, and he told me that obviously they have a very high interest of getting the people away from the aggregators, because they're getting some margin from you, and you don't control the whole experience. And they have high frequency users that are offered then 5-10% discounts, which are for those users like an important kind of thing, collecting points. And then when I prepared for this podcast, I thought, okay, if this is working for Domino's, which is even a tighter niche than actually Burger King is serving from a target customer perspective, this must also be working for you. So are you focusing on a digital experience
very much? I think
special burgers only available in your app,
for example, but the whole loyalty setup, the whole customer experience when the digital universe is for me, when we look a little bit forward, let's say 2 to 3 years, that is definitely need to be relevant within the business and be able to earn money and have the revenue. You need to have a really strong, clear digital profile, and you need to own the whole digital journey, and including loyalty programs and sentiments and so on.
But sure, I'm not that good in math, but from the 25 people that are working in the headquarter, I guess it's not too many left over that can do the digital experience.
No, but we work with very good. You need to do what you're best at. Yeah, that's my opinion. So if you have a software company who's really the best of the best to develop an app that runs a perfect digital journey, then we, of course, work with them. I think we don't have the volume in the Danish market. We also are quite small market with only, as I mentioned in the beginning, 58 restaurants or 59. So if I had like 1,000 restaurants, if you go to Germany, Spain, France, which are larger markets, I think they have a different overhead than I have. And there you maybe bring it in-house. But my approach is to have a very strong team who knows the core business, who can execute on what we agree on. And then we go and cooperate and find the best, most innovative guys we can in the business, for example, the digital one. And that's what we are looking into now, if we have possibilities to build this future cooperation with some of the good ones in the business.
And do you think it might lead to like really individual kind of voucher systems? Because today you're getting this, sometimes it comes as a newspaper, so just a big page. Here's your, like your Burger King vouchers, just cut them off, the ones it's very inefficient because my son maybe only likes the nuggets, and then obviously you should offer him like a slightly bigger voucher on the nugget menu.
Definitely. I think already now we do, of course, coupons and so on with the digital, but it's not individual targeted. It is a general, we decide and say, we think these, let's say 20 products will do a coupon push on the next coming month, and a good discussion internally, look at the numbers, but the more individual targeting using the data for the guests or the customers, of course, that is what is needed. And we already have quite a good framework on how we want to approach this. But we also need to balance, of course, different regulations and so on in the markets and in EU. But I think you will see much more individual targeted coupons, advertising and so on, making it much more relevant for the guest in the end.
When you're expanding your footprint, new restaurants in Denmark or Sweden, you're financing it from your own P&L, I guess?
Yeah, we are. We are open both King Food restaurants, so our own operated, and we also open new franchise restaurants. So it's both. The growth comes from both parties. And I think you'll also see, back to your question about franchise, we'll see more growth from franchisee coming in when we look forward 3 to 5 years. So we'll still be much relevant operating, but you also see franchise growing a lot.
And what is a franchise process? Are there people that are usually doing franchise that did franchise before with another brand, or are those people that do have already like two Burger King franchise restaurants and then open like another one or two?
Yeah, both. So we have different approaches, of course. We have one which is existing franchisee. Do they want to develop and grow with us? Then, of course, we do a cooperation with them. We agree on growth areas and try to align what will make sense for them and for us. Then you have the opening for the new ones. And there we are quite open, actually. We want people coming in who has a passion for the brand. But you don't need to have been with a competitor for 10 years or been franchise business before. But of course, you need to have a commercial understanding and you need to bring capital to grow and to invest in your
franchise business. Let's say I want to open something in Aarhus.
Yeah, it could be right.
close or Kolding or whatever. So how much money would I bring to the table I would focus on the deeper charging kind of thing.
Yeah,
there's still potential there.
Yeah.
Maybe supercharger close to a city so you can get like the traffic from work and
some home delivery coverage. Yeah. No, I think for the depending, of course, on location and there's different costs for different locations, but just come into the market, you need to bring around 2 to 3 million. A minimum.
Kronos?
Danish kronos. So that's around 300,000 to 400,000 euros. Yeah, ish.
That gives me like one restaurant.
That gives you one restaurant, yeah. And that's something where we can start growing together.
But on top of that, I need to pay like a franchise fee, correct?
Yeah, there's a franchise structure, I think, like all the franchisee, where we have a clear structure around that. That's very a standard, I think. There's nothing special with that.
Okay.
So, but growth-wise, I think you can generate new cash flow for new investments and grow one by one. But I think coming in and having this, I want to grow with the business and bring that capital is needed when we look forward. I think this coming in and having one or two restaurants is difficult because we have a market and we can see the potential of growth. So the one we're looking for, new franchisees, needs to have the mindset of they want to grow.
And if you want to go into this business, it might make more sense to start a franchise with like a big brand like Burger King or McDonald's instead of going with like a small one. So my observation was that some of the franchise businesses went out of business or reduced the business. For example, what was the burrito kind of thing called where you hit like breads and like on the breads you could put different stuff on top. Subways. So Subways in Germany, I see it at least restaurants where I experienced restaurants before they're closing. Are there some brands going out of the market?
Yeah.
You don't have it in Denmark.
No. So no, I think we're quite consolidated in the Danish markets. I think we had Subway many years ago. Please don't
didn't
ask
work
me
out. Okay.
apparently.
Because I was always wondering, because you have those huge American brands, like Taco Bell, Kentucky Fried Chicken, which, I'm asking myself, so why? Because we are becoming, the taste becomes more global.
Yeah.
I would say. Yeah. You have like a lot of American tourists like traveling everywhere. Yeah. So opening up Kentucky Fried Chicken in all the global airports in Europe, Amsterdam, London, whatever, and like expand from there. Easy.
But yeah, KFC is also in Denmark and Sweden, but not that big. Yeah, I think we're talking about, again, with around 20 restaurants maximum.
Okay.
And so, then, no Taco Bell, nothing now.
Okay. And then there's like a new trend now coming up. Apart from the home delivery stuff, which is done by DoorDash or Wolt, which is dark kitchens.
Yeah.
Which are, I see it even now that there's dark kitchen without the restaurant structure that are offering like menus from 5-6 different brands. They're all listed in the Lieferando app or in the Wolt app.
Yeah.
And depending on what works best, and that might be in trend from an influencer. So influencer starting now this dark kitchen brands, and then they sell it as like a franchise. And then you can say, okay, I do the influencer taco kitchen now. I put it on the menu in Aarhus, listed at Wolt, and see what kind of orders are coming in, which I found very interesting. And obviously the value creation lies in having the brand.
Exactly.
And not running the dark kitchen.
No, exactly.
So what's your view here?
I think it's really interesting. We haven't seen it in Denmark yet.
No?
So no, not really in that much. I think very small scale. I think it will come. I think it's interesting to have that concept coming in. And also, I think you will see, I don't think it's impossible that you also will see Burger King footprint going down. We also discussed it in Seamless. I think, you know, bricks and mortar is a little bit of your concern sometimes. Or
a little bit. A little bit. A very, very optimistic frame.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So I still, as we also
discussed. But you're not dependent on brick and mortar footprint.
No, exactly. My point was more that we are going in a direction where you also see brands as the Burger King coming in to have a much less footprint, and I think also competitors already now tested in the Danish market, you know, this grab and go solutions where it's you only have the kitchen part, and then you can pick up, you can take with you yourself, or you can get delivered,
and that would be much cheaper than the 400K, right?
Exactly, that's a different concept, but that's also why when we're talking moving forward, I think there's much more flexibility in the way we want to run business, and we need to adjust to the market, of course. And the market will also be more open for minimal footprint. There's also another discussion on whole, you know, the sustainability and the way we approach and building businesses. But all the way down to what is also good business is to have a minor footprint, but you still have a huge coverage. You have a huge sales because people get it delivered or they just pick it up. They don't want to sit in a restaurant in some areas. So that possibility of driving business through these channels, I think, will grow also moving forward.
Can we quickly go through the your pitch of a foreign franchisee? So if you pitch me and say, Alex, you want to do something in colding, you have to invest like 400K, then I would ask you, so how long until I need to renovate the restaurant at like another 100K? And what's going to be my yearly return, or what is like the interest rate I'm getting on my investment? So I guess you have this discussion quite often.
What's
the calculation here?
Yeah, I can not share that much. Yeah, I would gladly do.
You can open.
Yeah, like,
it's only you and because I need to know if I should invest.
Yeah, of course. Then turn off. Yeah, then I'll tell you. No, I think let's talk just general. I think we have very different location and very different sales prognosis from location to location. And that should also reflect in the fixed cost, for example, the rent level and so on. So that will also vary the return of investment, of course. So there is fixed cost. You need to invest in this much to create a restaurant that has room for 70 people and so on. So there is a standard fixed cost. And then there is the variables of the location, the potential sales, the rent especially, and of course also home delivery coverage. That's some of the variables. So therefore, the return on investment will go from, let's say, from 10% up to 20%. That varies, yeah.
Okay, and today when I stopped at the Supercharging Burger King, that's a good name, Supercharging Burger King.
Copyright.
I was order number 768 or so. Is it a true number? And was I really order number 768?
Yeah, but depending on when we reset the different tickets, yeah. So
you're not resetting it in the morning?
No, not the tickets necessary. No, if you're what 700 what?
760.
No, that could actually
and it was lunchtime.
That could be accurate, yeah.
Okay. Let me do a back of the envelope calculation here. Yeah, so lunchtime, and then let's say half of the business was done. Okay. People are rather coming at the evenings instead of the mornings, right?
Yeah, you have a larger frequency from around midtime, okay. And then you have again in the afternoon.
Say
people
this
traveling.
Was my order was 150 krona.
Yeah.
Could be an average order size.
It could be.
I get okay. You don't need to confirm or deny here.
No.
Then, but 150 krona. Let's say 2,000 menus a day on a very good day.
Hmm.
150,000, 300,000 kronas per day. That's too much, right? It's a bit too much. That would be like 30,000 euro revenue. That's a bit too much.
That's a really good restaurant. Yeah. It's not impossible, yeah? Without saying,
okay, for
denying 30, or...
For 30,000 a day, so I must have, I think I've added, I have 10.
It was a
zero mistake here.
Yeah. But yeah. No, but I think... We are not
talking about like a high risk investment. So if you are in control of your rental fee and if
exactly.
you believe in the brand to extend so and do have like a tight management
exactly.
of personnel, 10% return on your investment
definitely
could
doable.
Happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
It's a really good business. And of course I also need to say that when I'm now responsible, but I think the last years we really stabilized the brand also, and moving forward you will see much more from the brand. Be investing heavily, the brand will be giving much back to the franchisees.
I've recalculated 18,000 euros a
okay.
day. 18,000 euros a day. Is this a kind of a ballpark that's possible for the first one?
Yeah, it's not unachievable. No, it's not. No, I think that could be done. Yeah.
Okay, got it. And what else has changed, like in the restaurant value chain itself, like inside the restaurant instead of the, I saw the kiosk. So you're ordering now on a digital way, but behind the desk, has there anything changed dramatically over the last 10, 20 years? Yes, you have added a couple of new burgers, but.
Yeah, of course.
Apart from that.
I can refer to the last couple of years, but know that the process, the operations is very much the same. But what we are now is we are digitalizing also in the kitchen. So we get a more higher accuracy in Russian peak, for example. So it's more clear which order goes to what. So we don't have, for example, mistakes happening within the orders. You get the wrong burger, you're lacking a dip or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we have some issues coming in now. We're testing a more digital approach also in the kitchen, more easy flow within the order screens. And that will help, of course, operation improve. But coming back to basic, we still do the burger. It's really classic, yeah.
Okay, I have not prepared you for this question, but but I'm interested.
You didn't prepare for any
question. That's also true. But like for the follow for the next one that's coming, have there been initiatives you've tried out where you thought that's a really smart idea? We kind of quadruple our business, and then at the end nobody picked it up, so no additional order. Well,
I haven't found the jewels yet. Yeah. No, I think.
But have you done things where you believed, okay, that's going to be a jewel. We need to invest there, and then it didn't add nothing to the.
No, I think in general, my approach also and the way we work in business was the type of business is we did the small things to do the changes. And that is really.
So operational excellence.
It is. Yeah. It is coming back to that. That is really, I think, one of the core things in running the good guest experience. And the other part where I think we have potential is over our branding and marketing. But there's nothing, you know, untraditional or nothing I like.
It's still
businesses.
This kind of birthday kind of thing. Is this a thing? Because when
we just introduced it, actually.
Yeah, because when I have a Eastern Germany history, and obviously when like after when the wall came down, McDonald's was kind of one of the first big brands we saw, and then having a table for kids' birthdays at McDonald's was like during that time was kind of a big time achievement.
Yeah.
Is this still a thing?
We are trying to make it a thing again. Actually, it has been done very locally. And some restaurants, when people has approached us and said, could we do this? And we, of course, are trying to find a solution. We just put into a standardization, a concept for it, actually, internally, and spread out to all the restaurants in Denmark. And also we'll do the same in Sweden. So you can book now your birthday party again, officially, with the Burger King restaurants. And I think this is not going to drive, you know, the growth of the sales or anything, but I think it's one of the many things that make us relevant for in the local communities and within different areas where we are, have restaurants, that you actually can assess us, you can use us if you want to, and also for a birthday party. And maybe also it's nice as a parent to actually just deliver the kids, and then you can just drink a coffee cup behind the scenes.
That's a good point. And then another macro question. So with like, it feels like a recession, like in Europe, and like, or at least we had like a proven high inflation number over the last like 2 years.
Yeah.
Which was like a disaster for many people because they couldn't afford what they were, that were used to afford before. My understanding would be that this must have driven your growth because people must have left more expensive kind of food options, like more expensive restaurants, for example, and then move to like a Burger King kind of menu. Is this true or
no? Yes and no, meaning that we also, of course, was hit by closures. And we need to close down temporary, like other shopping malls and so on. So in that way, also hurt us quite a lot, the business during Corona. And also, I think still for many people going to a fast food restaurant or in within a QSR business is still something nice, you know, an add-on. It's not a need thing. It's something you do because you want to treat yourself on the go or do some convenience part.
And is it different in Europe than in the US? Because in the US, you have like many apartments without a kitchen. So people need to have
a takeout. Exactly. That's not a thing here. People have their own kitchens, they have refrigerators, everything, so they will do their own food.
It's still cheaper to go to the supermarket.
It is much cheaper to go to the supermarket. It's not the same as the Whopper in any way, but when you get pressure on your income, I think it's understandable that you try to save money where you can. And we could see it in a negative way mostly, that people also save money there. But in Denmark, it was really not that bad. Both Corona, inflation-wise, was high, but peaked, and then it went down, or still it's very low compared to where on the high end.
Have you tried?
So the effect is not that high here.
Have you tried super premium products? I didn't tell you, but I had my own cattle herd with my father-in-law. So we had Hereford and Wagyu cattle. So obviously the meat quality I was used to have and my minced meat was sensational.
Yeah.
And it's, I have to admit, there's a difference to what I experienced today.
Yeah.
But I definitely would have like the will to add like another $5 or so on my order in order like to get like really locally sourced certain meat quality, which would add a certain complexity to your processes. Have you tried this? Is there like a market for that?
Yeah, so we have different approaches there. In Norway, we actually have the Norwegian meat. So, and it's really, really good quality. There's something also they're quite proud of up there. It's, again, not my market, but I know they use it. And Max, our competitors in Sweden, also do Swedish meat. And we're looking into the possibilities to bring in the local. There is, of course, the technical and a little bit boring quality assurance and also volume. So it's also often a matter of that because we want to bring in the more local things, also local products. It could be local salad or local tomatoes, whatever makes sense. But the gourmet range, we call it the premium burger we have. And there you pay a bit more, like you say, but also invest more in the quality.
What is the name of the premium burger?
It's gourmet range. So you have, for example, you should try the chicken gourmet barbecue. My personal favorite. And I normally not promoting food, but this is really, really good.
Chicken gourmet barbecue.
This is really, So there is, I think there is definitely a market for the high end, and even though it's a little bit difficult sometimes with your operations, but it is something we have, and I think also the competitors have. So, and we'll keep having that, but want to bring it more local. That's something we're definitely aligned on. I want to do that, but there is the supply chain is difficult in some of these areas, of course, but it makes sense.
Nice. Anything I forgot to ask? Something that's in your mind, digitalization wise, which you would bring up to the next Seamless conference?
I think the obvious thing also, especially for you and your listeners, is the digital sales channels has been relevant for many years, but will become even more relevant, if you can say that, moving forward. And the balance, like we discussed in Seamless, moving from the classic brick and mortars over to maybe just pickup points and so on, is very interesting to follow. And that's the trend that's happening all over the the business, especially also in retail and so on. So, and I think it will also influence our way of running business moving forward and mid and long term. So that's going to be really interesting to follow.
So then we, after this podcast, we discuss how to implement it in the Tesla or Mercedes or whatever ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thank you for your time and thank you for the invitation to AUS.
Yeah, thank you.